This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Right now is one of the most important times in the 26-year history of Joy. Times are tough financially, but that will never stop us from delivering powerful, meaningful, and uplifting radio for you. To get ready for the future, we're launching Joy Nation, and we need your support to do it. So help Joy by asking your workmates, your next door neighbour, your mum, your dad, your siblings, and of course your friends. Go to joy.org.au and make a donation to build Joy Nation. Joy, your voice, your radio station.
A unique mix of world news and queer culture. Saturday Magazine. Every Saturday, 10 till 12 on Joy 94.9.
You are listening to Saturday Magazine, all the way from a cool and damp St Kilda from the Victorian Pride Centre. Macca.
Thanks, Tass. It's not cool and damp in here. It's warm and...
Well, it's nice in here, but outside it's cool and damp.
It is. Now, our next guest is Michael Veitch. And listeners, regular listeners will know we've spoken with Michael a number of times before about a whole range of books that he's written, particularly focusing on the Pacific War, the Second World War, in our geographic area. And I've got to say, Michael, I've actually lent some of those books to older people, a lot older than me, who lived through that. And a couple of them said, when you next speak to him, thank him, because this is a part of our history that is rarely written about, and rarely written about in a way that you've written it. And I love reading those books because I actually feel like I'm there. So thank you.
That's very kind of you, Macca. And honestly, it's just so lovely to be here and to see people and be in the studio. I want to hug everyone. It's inappropriate now. I wanted to hug the person on the desk. I wanted to hug
everyone.
The tram driver. I got the tram in today.
You're just happy to be
just
out.
Just happy to be out.
Happy to be sitting with people.
Yes. I'm actually proud to be out. Can we switch it that way?
Yeah, you can put it that way.
Yeah, we know exactly what you mean.
Yeah.
No pun intended.
It's so good to be here. And thank you for your kind words, Matt. You've been a lovely supporter of me, and I'm so touched by it.
And I've got to say, I actually buy the books.
You buy?
I buy the books. And you know, as Tass and others know, I love books.
I'm offering a 2-for-1 discount at the moment.
Good on you.
Actually, they might be good Christmas presents for people. There you go. So what we want to talk about today is... It's been a long time coming, this play.
Yeah.
We've actually spoken about it on air before, and I'm going to ask you to give the title, because I'm going to get it wrong in the pronunciation. So I'm going to ask you to tell us what the play is called.
The play is called Hellship, and it's a story. It's a story of a ship that came into Victoria in the 1850s at the height of the gold rush, an emigrant vessel, a beautiful big American-built clipper ship, and about 800 or so, mainly Scots, were crammed onto its two decks looking for a new life in the Australian colonies, and typhus broke out halfway through the voyage crossing the equator. It ended up being a disastrous voyage. It was the most severe of what they called the plague ships of the 1850s, particularly 1852. Limped into Melbourne. 100 had died on board. It couldn't come up to Melbourne. It had to go into quarantine at the yet-to-be-established quarantine station at Point Nepean, which then became our quarantine station for the next century. And this ship was its first customer.
What was the name of the ship?
The Ticonderoga, which is a Native American.
Well, I couldn't pronounce that either. Thank you for doing that.
That's all right. Yeah. Ticonderoga.
Which means what?
Well, it's a...
Shitty
I think
ship.
It's a, well, it's because it was an American ship, it was... It's a Native American word meaning, I think, just junction of rivers or something like that. And upstate New York, there's a little town called Ticonderoga. So, it was a huge story in its day. Victoria had only just become a colony. In fact, it wasn't even a proper colony. It was what they called a crown colony. It kind of had its trainer wheels on still. It wasn't going to be a proper colony for another couple of years. And this was its first crisis. This ship had arrived. They weren't convicts. They were people that were wanted.
Free settlers.
Yeah, free settlers.
But they're all sick.
The papers rang, and a lot of them were very, very sick, and a lot of them were very, very dead too. So another 100 went on to die in the quarantine hospital they set up just on the beach down there at Point Nepean. It was a November, so it was warm, not like this November, hopefully. But one of the heroes of it was the young ship's doctor. And so I've written the story from his perspective, because he was instrumental in, even though they didn't know what they were doing, they had no idea about diseases or anything back then, he did his best for the people. He was regarded in great high regard. He was part of a royal commission sort of into how it went wrong. So I've written the book from his perspective, and I'm doing a play, and I've been touring a play which is basically him telling the story 50 years after the event. And I'm doing it from his point of view because he was my great-great-grandfather.
Aha. And there's a personal connection there.
Indeed. And the young lady he met on the ship who volunteered her services, she was a single female immigrant passenger by the name of Annie Morrison from the Isle of Mull, became his wife. And she was my great-great-grandmother. So it's a story that's... I wrote it a couple of years ago after the book, but then COVID happened. We were actually touring. In fact, the last show we did was the Port Fairy Folk Festival, okay. which we went off. We did two shows in one of those enormous marquees where you can't... There's so many people there, I couldn't see the back of the tent. It was nuts. But then we were all set to go at 45 downstairs the next week, and I remember walking across the stage, and it was Friday the 13th.
Oh, dear.
And that was the day that the Prime Minister brought in the 100 cap, and I said, guys, holding up my phone, do you think we're going to be able to do this? Oh, yeah, sure, we'll be right. And then, of course, the world fell off a cliff. And we're just climbing back up that cliff, so this is the third time this little play has been postponed.
So isn't it interesting, Michael, that this is about a voyage of people coming to Australia or coming to Victoria? And, of course, there wasn't the infrastructure. So no. It wasn't like, oh, we're not going to let you in. Well, actually, we'll let you in, but you go down the coast a
bit.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Like history repeating itself, Macca.
It, oh, well, absolutely.
You know, with history, they say it's the scene doesn't change, only the actors.
Yeah. Yeah.
So from a family perspective, and then doing this play, so it's at 45 downstairs, and I think it starts on the 23rd?
The 23rd of November for a week, yep.
Okay. And it's a one person?
With my son, the great-great-great-grandson of James William Henry Veatch, who's the sort of star of the play. And I've said it when he was older, because he was a young man in 1852. I've said it 50 years later, when he was only a few years older than I am now, telling the story perhaps for the first time, because even though it was a huge story in its day, it was kind of hushed up. It didn't fit in with a kind of marvellous Melbourne gold rush that was happening in the time, and people didn't want to talk about it. It was a disaster, and it was a terribly bad reflection on the government of the Charles La Trobe's, because he was our first governor.
Yeah.
And it was a bad reflection on his administration. And if you think letters, well, there's no such thing, but, you know, well, what used to be letters to the editor about politicians today are nasty, you should read them in 1852, when the only people that did write to newspapers could write beautifully.
Yes.
And they tore him to shreds. This incompetent administration, we should never have become a colony if these are the idiots that are running it, and these are... So, yeah, so Tom plays cello on and does some other things with
me. So you're the performer and your son does the music?
Some musical accompaniment, yes.
And a few other bits and pieces.
Yes, yes. It's set 50 years after the event, when a retired doctor is brought out to have an all-night vigil with a sick boy in a fever. So he... just something prompts him. It's a stormy night in Melbourne, and he's a widower by this stage, and he just starts telling the story, and it goes into all sorts of, various characters emerge. I play the ship's captain for a bit, and some of the immigration officers who encouraged all the Scots to come to Australia in the first place. But it's been a wonderful experience doing it.
Michael, you have a fan who's been listening in this morning and is very interested in your work, but he's also very interested in your perspectives on Bert Newton.
Oh!
It's a completely different topic, I know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But are you able to share your reflections on Bert Newton as a person and as an entertainer?
I didn't know him well, but the interactions I had with him, I was on... GMA several times.
And GMA?
Good Morning Australia. That was his...
Your mother would have watched it, Tess.
No, right. No, it wasn't all that long ago. It was on Channel 10. Yeah. It was his last real...
14 years.
It was on for...
He was on that for 14 years.
Oh, was he really?
Yeah.
And he was wonderful. And he was so utterly charming and made you sit down. He was extraordinary to look at because he had this... I mean, they called him Moonface.
Yeah.
I mean...
It's because he sort of mooned out, really, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. But he was just loved and so quick-witted. Mm. Even when the ads were on and the cameras were off and you were waiting to go on, he was just sort of like, he had a little really friendly repartee with you that just put you at ease and made you feel like a really important person and thanking you so much for being on his show. He was a delightful man. He really was. And... this is why he was so loved, you know. He's got always, that old-fashioned
warmth. Well, he's sort of part of our history, really. Yeah, I can't say that I ever really watched a lot of his shows, but it's just been part of my childhood.
The funniest stuff he did was when he was hosting New Faces.
Yes.
And he was hilarious because he was... And apparently he loved it because, you know, he didn't know what was coming up. You know, the acts... And he could... make really funny remarks about them that weren't nasty, but really, really funny. Yeah. Often they didn't...
And High Camp as well, I think.
Well, yes, yeah. I mean, he was, you know, completely... He was High Camp and way before his time. Here's a story. My uncle worked with Graham Kennedy for years and years and years on IMT in the Alan Veitch, and he was a great journalist and a really good writer. He worked with Graham for years. Nobody had any idea that he was gay. Mm. No one. It wouldn't even. I mean, you know, I don't need to tell you guys what society was like then. It was almost unthinkable back
then. See, I find that extraordinary. So do I. I mean, I look at Graham Kennedy and I think, why would anybody think that you were straight?
Yes. Well, now...
Really?
Are you kidding? My aunt Rosemary, long... God rest her pickled soul, was a huge Liberace fan. Liberace, we're talking. And I remember in the 1970s...
When she thought he was straight as well.
He would talk about how, you know, people think he's just a showman, but he's a wonderful pianist. I'm sure he'd make a wonderful husband. And I remember, to a young gay man. This was at Christmas, and I said, well, Arnie Rose, but I think he probably, you know, bats for the other side, as it was. And she gave me the death stare.
And she probably clutched
her. How dare you make such an assumption?
And she rose like the kind of Titanic rising from the deep to kind of stare me down. I did not dare, right? But that's what the world was like. I don't need to tell people that.
So there we go. Look, we've
how
asked
did we get onto that?
I know. Yeah, it was a listener question. So the play, Michael.
Yes, that's right.
Runs for 5 days, 45 downstairs.
Sunday, 6 days.
And, you know, look, another listener question. Is this the same Michael Veitch used to be in the D-Generation and Fast Forward? Yes.
No.
Oh, not D-Generation, but Fast Forward.
Yes, no, both of those. But is it the same Michael Veitch?
No, it's not.
Let's talk about the definition of the word same, shall we?
Okay. We need another segment on
look,
that.
I'm too young to remember the D-Generation and Fast Forward. I don't know what in it. Thank you, whoever listener. Is there a name to that listener?
Simon.
Good on you, Simon. Thank
so,
you.
So, really quickly.
And, of course, 317, who's your other fan.
Yeah, he's another fan.
That's their name. We don't know who they are. We just call them 317.
Oh, so here at Joy and People are numbers, not names. Well,
317
shocked.
Won't tell us what their name is.
Oh, okay.
It runs for 5 days.
Six days.
Sorry,
yeah.
Six.
Get your numbers right,
Macca. Get your numbers.
I've already messed up your schedule. How long is the actual, does the play run for?
Oh, just a little bit over an hour. So short show's a good show.
Yep.
And it's...
80 minutes according to your promo.
60. If it's a long night, yeah. If Tom wants to riff for a little bit. It's an hour and a quarter sort of thing, roughly.
What is the hardest part about doing this show, Michael? What's the most challenging for you?
Oddly, not remembering the lines. I think.
Well, that's a bit important for
staying,
an actor.
Yes, I know. Well, it's an hour monologue, so. I guess being. It's a hard one. Staying focused on stage.
Okay. All right.
Now we're going to... son Tom playing a Irish lament, and he actually sings a little bit in Gaelic.
Whoa.
There you go. Thank you, Michael Finch.
Thank you so much.
Now, if you want to hear all of that, you need to go and see the play. What's it called again? I'm not going to try and pronounce it. Hellship. Yes. And it's on at 45
downstairs in Flinders Lane.
There you go. And Fiona and I are actually going on the opening night. We're going to have a little sip, a little drinky.
Oh, you know.
You giving us a drinky? We get a drinky as part of that?
Yeah, man. Nothing's free in this world. There's no such thing as a free lunch in this world, Macca.
Oh, I don't know. If you're in Parliament, there is.
Perhaps there is.
We need to take a short break.
We do. Actually, we need to wind up. Thank you, Michael. Thank you for coming here. We'll have you back again extended after the play's been on. Let's have an extended...
let's hear about that other Michael Beach.
Yes.
Yes, well.
Saturday Magazine. Every Saturday from 10 until noon on Joy 94.9. Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.